Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Homage to the Blessed, Noble, and Perfectly Enlightened One is what we chant. So just allowing things to settle of their own accord as we come into this more formal sitting meditation context, if you want to call it that. Letting the dramas of the day that might have been stirred up a bit just settle in their own time. The winds, the dust, as they will, and if it's helpful to use your breath as a way of just bringing you into the present moment, whatever tool you're using, but just recognize whether it's the breath or the body as a anchor. They are just tools. They're not the kind of meditation in and of itself. They're just a way of quietening the mind. And I've been very fortunate to have had the last month in seclusion. And had plenty of time just to allow things to settle more and more. And when things aren't stirred up on a daily basis in terms of conversations and doing things and emails, people contact and internet stimulation and everything else that we're pretty much caught up in all the time, less so in the monastery, but you know, we can't even avoid it in the monastery. And then those things become real addictions too. I was reflecting on how addicted we're all becoming to emails. Or some, you know, a lot of people out there are addicted to Facebook and the like too. So this kind of compulsive need for communication and affirmation of ourselves and relationships. And you know, they can be quite rewarding, but they also keep us in this spin, in this cycle of me. Me as a person, as a personality, with all these relationships, the good and the bad, and the perceptions that come with that about who I think I am and who I think others are. And sometimes, you know, if people don't get their hit of Facebook or email or Twitter or whatever else they're on these days, they can feel really edgy. Take mobile phones off kids, young kids these days, and they get really edgy. And it's interesting to reflect on that. Why do we get so addicted to this constant input about, you know, from others, and then we have to output our views and opinions. And it's this kind of cyclic thing. And obviously, sometimes it's just because we have duties and responsibilities or families that we need to keep in touch with, but sometimes it becomes quite obsessive. And, you know, you take that principle of that addiction to sensory contact at that level, communication, you take that into your meditation. When you switch off from that and you see the same pattern apply in terms of the mind, this mind is constantly communicating itself to itself about who I am, about what others think of me, what I think of them, my views and opinions. It's like constant Twitter, inner Twitter. And reflecting on it during my month's retreat, you know, it's so clear that this mind and this sense of self is addicted to itself and its input. And if it stops, because if it stops, who is it? Or who am I? So it has to keep feeding itself this Twitter feed from the most inane thoughts, and mostly they, you know, we either are stuck in the past, the graveyard of the past, or projecting about our fears and anxieties about the future. And so little time is actually spent in silence in the present moment, because the mind desperately wants to survive. But if we start to develop a stillness in meditation and start to really investigate what is this experience right now of ourselves, and we know there's a body with all its sensations and twings and heavinesses, and the earth element, it's pretty obvious. And hopefully we know by now, having studied the Buddha's teachings and investigated within meditation, that the body is not who we are. The body is not self. But how often do we really believe that? Do we kind of take ourselves to be this body and worry obsessively about it, or criticize it, or get attached to whatever it's doing or not doing as we get older? So do we really understand at a deep level that we are not our bodies? And sometimes within meditation, we, you know, if we can ignore the body, we'll tend to ignore it and then habitually just go to the mind. This is who I am. These thoughts. And the Buddha was very clear. Form is not self, feeling is not self, perceptions are not self. Mental formations are not self. So why do we believe our thoughts so much? Why do we feel that that is who we are? As the mind is such a trickster. But if you really start to investigate within your meditation, and I, you know, encourage you to do it right now, and go and find the mind. Where's the mind? Show me which is the mind, which thought is you. And if you're not any particular thought, then show me the mind. How do we know that we have this mind? Why do we assume that we have this mind? So we can see that the mind is simply a bundle of thoughts. As a number of teachers have pointed out, the mind is simply that process of thinking. So we're not the mind, and we're not the body. But as we investigate, perhaps you can see how attached we are to this experience of form, name and form, concepts. We give everything a name and then we think we know. This is who I am. This is what's going on. This is who this other person is. And it's a constant Twitter stream, isn't it? So if we can start to really investigate thinking and where it's coming from and where it's going to, I don't think it's that difficult to see in this moment that the thoughts come from nowhere, from the mind, if you like, this thing we call the mind. And where do they go? They dissolve into nothing. Just like flimsy little clouds. So, if they're so wimpy and so flimsy, why do they cause us so much suffering? And why are we so identified with these thoughts as me? If the Buddha said that you're not your thoughts, hopefully we trust the wisdom of the Buddha, why do we refuse to believe him? Why do we identify and attach to our thoughts as me, as truth, when it's not truth? It's false. And the only reason we suffer is because we identify with name and form. And one of the things I realized during my retreat was that to some extent enlightenment is about realizing your mistake. It's actually not about gaining anything or getting anything, it's realizing the mistake you've made. It's a big mistake, but it's a kind of a ingrained, deeply ingrained ignorance. From a very young age we start to believe it, and all these thoughts that run through our head actually don't belong to us. It's just Twitter input. Your mum sent you a mental message. Your school teachers sent you another mental message. Your friends, your enemies, television, the government. And then it just gets put in there as conditioned processes. And then we think we know who we are. And then we're confused because we're not consistent, are we? There's actually no consistent view of ourselves. Depends what day of the week it is, how we're feeling, and then it's very confusing. We can start to see the fragility of this ego structure that's been built, and probably not just in this lifetime but in many lifetimes, these ingrained habits, sankharas, and really start to deconstruct them, not mentally, not thinking about them, but just looking at them and stepping back. There is something within you, and hopefully you've all discovered that, that actually can just witness from a place of impartiality, equanimity. Call it the kind of the Buddha mind, if you like, the one who knows that which in you that just watches. We don't want to make a personality out of that or call that a self either, just, but we know we have this knowing within us, awareness, which isn't a personality. It isn't a thought. It isn't even a sensation. It's just, we all know that. And it's really once we can establish ourselves in this place of quiet knowingness, silence, awareness, stillness, and just be, that we see, start to see clearly this the fraud, the mistake we've made of getting swept away by these internal mental processes, or identifying with our bodies and reacting to what's happening there. But also, if you ask yourself this question, which I find a really useful question to bring into meditation, into the investigation of what's happening, of one's experience, to ask yourself a very profound question, who are you? Who am I? Ask yourself, who am I? And it's not a question that needs an answer. It's a question that should bring you into a place of silence, of not knowing. Because there is, you know, the Buddha pointed out, there is no self here. There is no I. But you know you exist. There is some experience happening. There is some consciousness within us. And it's a fascinating thing to just start to investigate your own consciousness. The fact that you've somehow landed in this body, and you're a living, breathing being, and you think you're some slightly pathetic personality, as we all do, with lots of limitations and idiosyncrasies and habits and flaws, and we believe that. But when you really reflect on the fact that quite a mind-blowing experience to actually be, isn't it? To be alive. What is this? How did I get here, as Talking Heads said in their classic song. How did I get here? Where did I come from? And sweep away all those banal and mundane assumptions about this limited personality view, or this corpse-like body, and just stay with the consciousness. And don't go looking for answers in thoughts, with thoughts. Just stay in the silent space. And you can imagine that the thoughts and the sensations and anything that arises in your experience, you see that as the conditioned realm. That's what it is, that's what's happening. And it's like the waves, constant waves of samsara. But like the waves of the ocean, they all go back into the ocean, so you can just let them go. As they crash, if it's a rough sea, or that might just be little lapping, nice quiet lapping at the shore's edge. You can just recognize the rising and falling of everything within your experience. But look for that within you that doesn't change, at the depth of the ocean. The very stillness of your being. That it's not something you have to create, it's there, here and now. And the Buddha pointed to it, it's apparent here and now. It's who you are. It's your very, the depth of your own experience. And even if you only have an inkling of it, it's there, and as the waves subside, it becomes clearer and clearer, the depth of the ocean. And we have this idea that enlightenment or nirvana is going to be some big explosion sometime in the future, and it's going to be like this, and it's going to happen when I do this and when I do that. But it's like we miss the moment, we miss the very heart of what's here and now that we can rest into. That within us, which is timeless, that within us, which is unconditioned, there is the changeless within the changeful. It's not far away or to be had sometime in the future. It's certainly not in the past. So if we can drop these notions of I have to do something to get somewhere, to get enlightened, to get nirvana, and we can stop the effort, the struggle, and this delusion that we're this limited being, this limited personality with all of its problems. But to start to realize the peace that's here and now, we do have to wake up and look at what are the obstacles, what are the hindrances, because this can't be seen if the obstacles and the hindrances are there. So if we just zone out and fall asleep, we can't taste peace. And if we consistently hold on and crave and get attached to our thinking and our desires, we can't taste peace. If we're caught up in ill will, it's far away. If we doubt, keep doubting a capacity to wake up, then we're again stuck in this idea that I'm my thought, I believe my thought. And if we're restless and just thinking and fantasizing, nirvana's far away too. So we have to look each moment. Am I awake or am I dreaming? Dreaming myself into existence as a personality every mind moment. Or can I drop it all? Just keep dropping it all. Desires, wanting, fears. So in terms of so-called practicing meditation, encourage you as we move more into silence now just to hopefully some of those reflections were helpful, but also to just stop the effort, the striving, and just be yourself, just be here. Ayakema's book's really lovely in terms of being nobody, going nowhere. You've got permission just to actually drop it all and recognize that there's freedom in not being anyone or becoming anyone. More particularly becoming, stop becoming someone. And keep quiet.